Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night!
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 183rd edition of Dave's Gone By. On this August 6th, 2006, Mills a-poppin', ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. It's not going to be all Mill, all show, I promise. In fact, I'm barely even going to mention this Australian actor with the beautiful blue eyes and the miserable, horrible, corruptive, corrosive mouth. No, I will leave someone else, a special guest, to talk about Mel Gibson in just a little while. I've got some other things to do on the program as well, because we do lots of things on the Dave's Gone By show, as we've been doing for 3.5 years now. The program's been on the air since October of 2002, and in that time, We've had tons of music that we've played. We've had interviews with everyone from actors and actresses to musicians such as Tom Paxton and Christine Lavin and Peter Tork of the Monkees. And let's see, we've also had comedy sketches and monologues, and sometimes a guest host. As a matter of fact, I want to give a shout-out. White people really should not be allowed to give shout-outs. But if we could, if we lived in a world where white people felt as comfortable giving shout-outs as black people who invented it and are entitled to it, then I would give a shout-out to my good friend Jeff Goodman, who's out in Florida with his parents. He's taken a week there. He goes everywhere. He was in Vegas a week ago. Now he's in Florida, so I wish him well. And it's kind of funny. I would say, what the heck are you going to Florida for at this time of year? I mean, it's August. It's got to be hot and blazes. And then I have to think back just a few days ago and realize it couldn't have been hotter in Florida. Well, maybe it could have. Now that I think about it, you know, when we were sweltering for those days early in the week, and it was 95 degrees, 98 degrees with a, what do they call it, 105 degree actual real temperature when you factored in the humidity and the air stagnation, there were other places that were up to 115 on that meter and 120. So it's that the grass is always less brown on the other side of the fence when you look at it that way. So I hope you had less brown grass in Florida, Jeff, and I hope to see you back real soon. Before I forget to do all the other stuff, and I want to talk a little bit more about the heat wave stuff too, but I gotta give, well, see, this is another black thing that I'm stealing, and I'm so sorry. But I want to give props. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a theater person. I guess props fits. I want to give props to Hewlett Minuteman Press, Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, and MortgagesRock.com. These are our three wonderful and now long-running sponsors, and I want to thank each and every one of them. First of all, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Bible of Broadway and off-Broadway, and even off-off-Broadway. They've just put the finishing touches on the fall season preview issue. It's the September 1st issue, and it's coming out in late next week, so it comes out a couple of weeks before the month starts. And you've got to get a look at this thing. It's huge, and it tells you what all the big theaters and the little theaters are going to be doing the whole rest of the year, plus it's got all their regular listings. It is the Bible. They should take the Bibles out of synagogues and churches and the Korans out of the little huts they call mosques and just throw Performing Arts Insider into all of them and have people read that at worship instead of, you know, having to get up there and sing the same old, you know, Kaddish and Shema Yisrael and whatever Catholics do when they're fingering their beads or whatever else they're fingering if they're priests. And if they just got up there and started reading the listings from Performing Arts Insider, Chorus Line coming to Broadway, Ed Kleban wrote the score, you know, and just do it, I think it would be a much more interesting religion all the way around, don't you? Anyway, that's Performing Arts Insider. You'll hear more about that in a little bit. Also, Hewlett Minuteman Press, God bless them. They are the copy kings of the South Shore. They're on Broadway in Hewlett. They are still opposite the big Lohmann's, but they're next to now the Lohmann shoe store. So they're basically, it's sort of like Israel and Lebanon. Lululemon Press has been encroached on several sides now by Lohmann's, but they're holding their own because Lohmann's doesn't do copies and Hewlett Minuteman Press doesn't make shoes. But what they do is printing and binding and copying and giving Dave's Gone By listeners a 10% off on every job. And I got to give a big thank you and another, God help me, another shout out to a lovely lady at my local library who was so enamored and so amused by the program last week that not only did she tell all her friends and you know, at the library and compliment me like crazy, made me feel like a bleeding rock star when I went in there, because she's saying, oh, it's so funny, the funniest thing I ever heard. And I'm like, it can't be. I was there. I did the show. It was funny. It was not the funniest thing you ever. It couldn't be, or else you've had a really sad life. But I was just so thrilled that she was saying such wonderful things. And she took my picture. I mean, this is a woman, understand, who has seen me in and out of the library for the past 3 years. I mean, she works there. I work there. And suddenly, that's the power of media. You know, the voice gets out there. The humor gets out there. And suddenly, oh, my God, it's him. It's him. Well, yeah, it's me. I have to return these, you know, or else I get a fine. But God bless her. And she even physically went to Hewlett Minuteman Press and said how much she loved the show and told them. And said she's so happy that you're sponsoring this program that made me laugh so much. And they listened to her go on about this, and they were very happy because any sponsor likes to know that the show is being listened to and that people like it and people notice who's paying the bills and who's sponsoring them. I don't think she actually bought anything. That's the sad part. I don't think she actually spent one dime in Hewlett Minuteman Press, although had she spent $1, she would have gotten a dime back, being a Dave's Gone By listener. But next time, I mean, God bless you. Thanks. Do that again, and please go to mortgagesrock.com as well. You know, really wonderful to have a fan like that. But next time, you know, might help if you bought something. Anywho, mortgagesrock.com, got to get one more sponsor in there. They are the place to learn about how mortgages are done, how people go from needing money to get a college loan or to rebuild a house or to add on to a house or to get a new house or condominium or whatever they need money for to get that loan. How's it done? Well, MortgagesRock.com teaches you the ropes, not just so that you know if you're getting a loan what you're doing and how, you know, these papers you're signing, what they mean and what's expected of you. The idea is that you help other people get the loans and the mortgages that they need. So you learn the ropes through the website, and also there's people in an office right in the South Shore, right in Hewlett, who will help you. There's phone, actual humans you can call on the phone who will help you learn the business. And once you do, you'll start earning commission on every sale you make. So it's really a win-win situation at MortgagesRock.com, where making money never sounded so good. And speaking of good sounds, I want to just give a good, well, I hope to promise I won't say the words shout out together in any other part of this hour. I can't promise because I'm tired and I, you know, 20 minutes from now, the words shout and out might somehow collide with each other, and I'll just feel so embarrassed if I promise that they wouldn't. I might say out, shout, like go out, shout, and say your support for Israel. I might say that with the words, you know, flip backwards like that. That's okay. But shout out, whether there's a hyphen in between them or not, I will promise to try not to use again, except for this moment. Run, I want to give a shout-out to Joyce Keller, who has a psychic show Wednesday nights at 11 on this station, WGBV AM 1240, and also to Vic Fusco, who currently has two programs on Sunday night. At 7, it's Swing City Vic, and at 9 o'clock, it is Country Music in Exile, except I may have switched them. One is a country show, one is a swing show. You got to listen to GBV to find out which is which and when. Okay, good enough. Anyway, let me tell you about what's going on this particular program. Well, as I said, Mel Gibson is going to be a topic in a little while, but I won't be talking about him because as much as I have strong feelings about it, I'll be ambivalent issues because, you know, I know what it is to say things when you're either, I've never been drunk, but certainly when I've said things in heat or anger or in panic that, well, maybe I did mean them, but I didn't mean to say them. So, you know, I can kind of understand where people who defend Mel Gibson are coming from on that. But, and at the same time, what he said is so unbelievably reprehensible and only confirms the rumors about him from The Passion of the Christ, which I did not see, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't now. But again, more than someone who would have a stronger, visceral reaction to the whole Mel Gibson story than I would is going to be on the program tonight. He's one of my favorite guests, and some other people's too, and other people find him absolutely loathsome and disturbing and embarrassing, and that's what makes him so wonderful. Yes, Rabbi Saul Solomon is back on the program tonight, just 2 weeks after he weighed in on the whole Israel-Lebanon thing. I don't think he's going to be quite as controversial as he was then, considering the fact that the last time he was here, he did a top 10 list of why Israel should wipe out the Arabs and everything, every filthy thing they do, die, 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 you sons of bitches, die. I mean, it was something along that lines. That's almost verbatim there. Well, now he's leaving a bit of that behind, and he's going to talk about the whole Gibson incident. You don't want to miss Rabbi Saul's take on old Mel. But anyway, glad we all got through that heat wave this week. I mean, it's funny, everybody's like awful and miserable and you don't want to deal with it, and all the news, the first 10 minutes of every news program is, it's hot, it's hot. And it's the same thing like with the first snowstorm of the year. Like, we've never seen snow before. And they say, well, you know, they go into the hardware stores and they go into the Home Depots and they ask the guy, well, are shovels selling? Oh, the rock salt is almost gone. And, like, it's, they might as well replay the same story from 9 years ago. It's the same damn thing. And yes, and you wonder why people didn't buy shovels, say, 20 years ago. It's not like you have to replace a shovel every year unless it's made of, you know, gauze. So, but yeah, every 24 hours before that snowstorm, everybody's off not just getting milk, you know, or bread, or shopping for that kind of stuff, but getting stuff that could have been in their garage since their great-grandparents were still around, you know? But in the heat wave, it's, again, it's hot, and the horrible, you know, actually the funny thing was that the Con Ed disaster was the week before, when it was already, like, an ugly kind of high 80s hot, but it wasn't the 90s, oh yeah, I'm dying kind of hot. To be relentlessly reminded of it, and then, of course, always saying, you got to conserve and don't use things wastefully. And never occurred to me, one thing that I did learn from this heat wave, from one of Bloomberg's speeches, was that the heaviest usage time, which I always assumed would be like the middle of the afternoon because it's hottest out and all the offices are going and, you know, and people are also, you know, people who are home have their things on because that's the sun is literally blazing from 12, 1, 2 in the afternoon. But no, the worst time power-wise for a heat wave is actually between 5 and 6 because the way offices are now, most of them are still powered up and running until 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. Not, you know, this isn't 1950s anymore where 5:01 p.m., you know, everybody's out except the big boss and he's just dallying with the secretary. Things just keep going on. Meanwhile, people are already starting to get home between 5:30 and 6. And air conditioners go right on. Computers go right on. Televisions, so hopefully not washing machines and dryers. But well, that was kind of an interesting fact. Now, one of the things that I did, not during this mega, mega heat wave, but from the minor heat wave the week before, was what any sane, intelligent, rational person should do during a heat wave. I played tennis. Don't ask. I've been taking tennis lessons for the past few weeks. It's part of a local adult ed program, and I think it's wonderful. It's inexpensive, and it's one of the things we pay $4 zillion in taxes so that our adult ed programs can be cheap, but fun, but good. Okay, that's part of Long Island. So we start playing, and I figure the first week or wherever, we'll be in a gym, and we'll just be volleying things back and forth in an air-conditioned gym. But no, and we're on an actual tennis court by school, and we're out there in the first day or two, and it's kind of nice weather, but a little bit schmitzy. And then there was that one day about 3 weeks ago when it was as hot as it had been this past week. And yet we all got, I don't know what was in our heads. I think it was just the desire to get out there and play, plus we paid money. That always helps. And so, we're and within 2 minutes, and I'm sorry, most of the other players on that we were working with, sometimes there would be four or five people, and sometimes it would be up to like 10 or 15 people. Most of them were women. And one thing I noticed, and I don't get this, they would glow a little bit, and they drink some water and wipe their foreheads. Me, I'd be running around, and the top of my shirt, within 5 minutes, was just stuck to my body and plastered damp wet. Women really don't sweat. I guess they do perspire. But from what I've seen, I don't know how they're built differently, or if they just, when I wasn't looking, they would turn around and run to a fan, and just, you know, so that they wouldn't look all schwitzy. Beyond me. But all I know, I would peel off my shirt, and it would literally, I never put it on a scale, but I assume it weighed about 2 pounds. And the weirdest part was, on that hottest day, not a lot of people showed up, so the teacher let me play an extra session, so we went almost 2 full hours on the court. And it's amazing that I literally didn't keel over and die right there. Although I did say it's a wonderful course. I finally learned a few things. I've been trying to play tennis for years now. I play with a friend of mine locally every once in a while, and we have great fun, but, you know, I'm terrible, he's terrible. We're both different kinds of terrible. Now I think I can kick his ass, because I learned a few things. And then, you know, you have to get to the side of the ball. You have to do the square thing, which I still have to figure out. And also what helped was had been using a racket that I inherited from the year Gimmel. It was like in a garage sale or in a thrift shop that my grandmother got for me 20-odd years ago. A good old-fashioned wooden racket. And the teacher says, okay, you're using this. Let me, you know, teacher has to make a little money on the side. So she sells people who are interested these new, nice Prince rackets. And, okay, they are about half the weight of the old rackets. They're just nice and light in the hand and back and forth, and it's great. And then I also realize, first time I'm playing with it, that the head of the racket is about 3 times the size of the... I'm thinking, is this a badminton thing? No wonder I'm getting to the ball more. No wonder I'm returning so many of these. I'm not getting better. She's giving me a racket the size of Cuba. But, hey, whatever works. You know, I'm not going to be playing Wimbledon. I'm not going to be out there in any kind of tournament. I'm just going to be out there having fun. So if that's going to help me lob a few balls back and not look so much like an idiot, you know, and what was really cool was, I mean, I'm a total spastic on the court, and yet I'm better than most of the other people playing, which is, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man's kind of king. So I felt like, hey, you know, and the teacher would rotate me from one group because she felt I wasn't being challenged enough. It's the first time ever in the history of my playing tennis that I've ever felt that. So I want to thank her just for boosting my confidence, if nothing else. Except, of course, on the very last time that I played, I didn't even bother going out during the heat wave. I said, there's no way I'm going to play in 99-degree weather again. But the previous time, you know, when I'm feeling really good and cocky and getting out there and lobbing it back and forth and showing these people what I can do, and then we turn around and while we're waiting after we played to look at some pro instructor who's out there showing some young kids how to do it, and he's just tossing things over the net. It's like swatting a fly to him. Picks up a ball over the net. He's showing them left and right and backhand, and I just sank into the ground. I'm like, I couldn't have had one little moment of glory where I felt really proud of my accomplishment. I had to be shown that, you know, I'm an ant in a world of elephants. Oh, well. Yeah, it also showed me that, you know, with all that I was doing, the great health of tennis, I may have lost a pound or two, but I also got, like, blisters and calluses and exhaustion. Why do I do it? I don't know, especially in this kind of weather. I'll pick it up again in fall, you know, definitely. It'll feel a little bit better then, when it won't be, as Suzanne Vega called it, 99.9 degrees Fahrenheit.
Man on the back. Hey, baby, for a good time, don't call me. Read Dave Lefkowitz's book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's got all these funny comedies in it, and they make you laugh, they make you think, they make you, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com. If you like Dave on the air, you'll love him between the covers.
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off Broadway, off, off Broadway, off, off, off Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Yes, Dave Goes Off is the name of the segment, and I'm not going to go off on Mel Gibson. No, that'll be the Rabbi's province in just a little while from now. But I did want to say something about the whole minimum wage thing. It's amazing how that's all kind of sneaking under the radar because there's so much going on with Lebanon and with everything else that's happening. Oh, by the way, Mets won today. But aside from that, somewhere in this country, something even a bit more important than what's going on overseas was happening in, here. And it was covered on the news and in the newspapers, but not perhaps in the way that it ought to be. There are still millions of people, and not just, immigrants and illegals, who are working for $5.15 an hour. Now, not in New York. New York has its own tier. New York, they've raised the minimum wage to a whopping $6.75 an hour. How nice of them. How humane to have that. But the New York, because it's done state by state in our wonderful federal system, there are places that are still doing only $5.15. In fact, this is kind of funny. I looked this up. First of all, New York is not the highest of the minimum wages. You think it would be. But Washington is higher. Washington State, not District of Columbia. Theirs is $7.63 an hour. New York's is going to go up in January, but then it's only going to go up to $7.15. So for some reason, Seattle has us beat. God knows why. Meanwhile, even though there's a federal $5.15 minimum wage, Kansas... the minimum wage there for non-federal things is $2.65 an hour. I have never been to Kansas. I have really no intention of going to Kansas. But what is milk there 30 cents a gallon? Can you take a cab there for a dollar and a half? How can you get health insurance there for, $3 a week? How can anybody think of paying $2.65 an hour and look at themselves in the mirror? I can't actually see how any real company can pay anything in this climate, in this America, less than $10 an hour and call that a humane living wage. Anything less than $10 is still, to me, kind of a poverty wage unless really you're working a second job. But and what kills me about what happened this week between the Republicans and Democrats is that they politicized this thing again. This should have been a no-brainer. Everything has gone up ridiculously. Even if you were to just count the $2 the gas has gone up since the last minimum wage hike. Just gas alone. Forgetting about health care, because we have to assume that people who are struggling to afford gas and other things aren't even going to bother with health care. They're just going to fall under the radar. Okay. So should it be such a big deal for America to realize that people should be paid a living, decent wage? Somewhere in the realm of $9 or $10 an hour at the very, very least, especially if they're not going to cough up anything for health insurance, right? Meanwhile, well, it seemed like the Democrats and the Republicans were together on this one. Yay! Right, okay, no biggie. America's a rich country. We should be able to do this. What do the Republicans do? They build in a poison pill in this bill that, to because the Democrats want this so much, they're going to make an estate tax, a repeal of an estate tax, part of that. So what happens is Republicans piggyback, they leech onto a bill that everybody should be really in favor of, a bill that people can rightly be upset about because it basically helps the rich. It's for estates of over like $1.5 million to $20 or $50 million, something like that. We're not talking about just inheritance tax and things like that. We're talking of the 7-0 kind. So in order for the poorest of the poor in America to be helped out a little bit, they would have to give double what that's worth to help the richest of the rich. And the Democrats, you know, saw behind that and said, even though we're going to look bad per se, because we're going to vote this down, how dare you turn this issue sideways like that and screw everybody by piggybacking that issue onto it. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I've been with GBV for about 3.5 years, and we have a posted in the boardroom here, in the boardroom, in the control room here, by law, you know, the equal opportunity stuff about how, what hiring and how you have to hire everybody, and race, creed, color, and right next to it, attention employees, the minimum wage information. And it says the minimum wage information is $6.75 an hour that started on January 1st, 2006. Why is that? Why do they have that here? Well, because that's what most of the people here actually get paid at this radio station. Maybe I'm giving away some kind of weird trade secret, but I think it's important to know that it isn't just some guy named Pedro who came over from Mexico and is just, you know, scrubbing dishes and plates in some restaurant who's slaving away for the $6.75 an hour if he's legal. You know, if he's not, he's making $4 an hour. But it's actual folks, not just kids, college kids making a few extra dollars or even high school kids making that, but real human beings are forced to work at certain kinds of jobs for that kind of money because they really want the job or that's what's out there. And one of the reasons we need a federal rise in the minimum wage, not to mention a continual rise in New York State minimum wages, is to shame companies like this into saying, you know, you're paying the absolute bottom-of-the-barrel, knuckle-scraping, bare minimum to people, even though, obviously, the people who are higher up, the people who own the businesses and the radio stations, the people who are just one or two levels higher, aren't even thinking in terms of this. That's the problem with the minimum wage issue for people, because if you're in a quote-unquote normal job in the corporate sector, you're probably making $20 an hour, $25, $30 an hour, maybe, you know, before taxes and stuff. So it isn't even on your radar that there are people making a whole bunch less. And I do think that that's the reason people aren't more up in arms. Or I was in a cab last week coming to the station, and the guy was just raving. He was saying, look, you know, with the way the gas prices have gone, I get in the cab and a short fare is meaningless to me. You know, there's a little bit of a tip, and the company gets most of it, and there's no money. I can go and work my ass off and come home after about 6 or 7 hours with $40. And it's just not even worth it. And then out of that $40, he's still paying for other things and then taxes. I mean, it is nuts. So what it all means is that millions of people now, because that bill was struck down, are still going to be working for their state's minimum wage. It means that in places where it is federally regulated, for several more months, if not years, human beings will be sweating and toiling, or even if it's an easy job, even if they're just a night watchman. You know, is it worth to sit there and watch monitors and be nervous about people walking by for $5.15 an hour, or even $6.75 an hour, until, you know, the government is forced to put up or shut up and help its people right here, then, you know, there are millions of people who are just going to be suffering or getting by or just scraping that poverty line because of it. And it pisses me off being, you know, the word before Dave goes off. See, there it was a pleasant rant, a gentle rant. I do not guarantee the same, though, for my upcoming guest when he starts talking about Mel Gibson, because the rabbi is in the house, and he will be here right after this. Sir, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you photocopying your butt?
Yeah, isn't it cool? I want to send lots of copies.
Not in a public library.
I know, it's so expensive here. 25 cents a cheek.
No, I mean, why not go to Hewlett Minuteman Press?
Hewlett Minuteman Press?
1315 Broadway in Hewlett. They make copies, they can laminate it, print it in a booklet, put it on a mug.
My ass on a mug? Wow!
Call 516-569-5577. 516... Hey! Stop it! You can't copy that!
But what do I put on the other side of the mug?
Mazel tov, mazel tov, you know, the Hanukkah is in!
Congratulations!
Shalom, shalom, goddammit, this is Rabbi Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and it is always a pleasure and an honor to be here on this radio program, Dave's Gone By. I want to thank my good friend Dave for providing me with this radio forum for opinions, my advice, and my unremitting rage. You can probably guess what I'm here to talk about this evening. How ironic that all this Mel Gibson mishigas happened just before the holiday of Tisha B'Av. Did you celebrate? It was last Wednesday night into Thursday, the saddest day on the Jewish calendar. Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av, the ninth day in the Hebrew month of Av. No, not of Av. Why would I say of, you stupid bastards? Do I sound like a stutterer? Actually, yes, I kinda do sound like a stutterer, goddammit. No, Tisha B'Av means the ninth day in a month called Av. Just like July 4th means the fourth day in the month of July. Or April 1st is the first day in the month of November. April Fool. See, I can be funny, I can be amusing in a clean, friendly, non-abusive way. You sons of bitches. So listen, Tisha B'Av is the saddest holiday of them all. Everybody thinks Yom Kippur is. All the Jews walk around with a prashunking upon them. Oh, Yom, we're so sorry. Forgive us, Hashem. Keep us in the book of life one more year. But Yom Kippur is not a holiday of sadness, of despair. That's just a holiday of anxiety and bad breath. Anxiety? Because we have to atone for all the lousy things we did in the past year and hope Hashem doesn't kill us for doing them. And bad breath, because nobody eats. Ever go to a temple on Yom Kippur? It's like someone opened a dumpster at a salami factory. Not a place you want to be unless you feel so guilty about whatever it is you did that your punishment is standing around with a room full of starving Jews breathing on each other. Forget burning in hell for all eternity. Stand next to a middle-aged accountant who hasn't eaten since 5 o'clock the night before. You will feel repentance for everything you ever did, everything you ever thought about doing, everything your parents ever did. If someone tells you, go to hell, you say, I don't need to. I just spent 3 hours sitting next to Mickey Schwartzman. No, but that's Yom Kippur. That's coming in October. What we just got through 3 days ago is Tisha B'Av, which commemorates the destruction of both the first and second temples in Jerusalem. The first was demolished on the ninth day of Av in 586 B.C. B.C. meaning before Goyim went crazy. And the second destruction was in 70 B.C. when the Romans knocked down the sequel to the first temple. And if that isn't sad enough, Tisha B'Av also lumps in a bunch of other headaches and tragedies for the Jewish people throughout history. Most notable is the expulsion from Spain in 1492, not so coincidentally the same year Christopher Columbowitz, a semi-converted Jew, sailed the ocean blue.
and Fish Above is actually the tail end of a 3-week mourning period. Jews don't do anything by halves. When we mourn, we mourn. And many Jews also fast on Tisha B'Av, just like on Yom Kippur. They don't wash, they don't bathe, they don't work, they don't have sex. Basically, they turn into redneck husbands. So, I hope that last Wednesday and Thursday, you took the time to be really upset and depressed. You made the effort to grieve not just the temples and the crusades and the pogroms and the Holocaust and the Arab wars and the terrorist attacks, but also the death of Jan Murray and the last episode of Seinfeld. And, as if all that weren't enough to worry about, now we've got the whole world hating us because we dared fight back against those Hezbollah bastards and their rockets. Now here's a joke. What do you get when you take away an Arab's Iranian-made cruise missile? An unarmed homicidal maniac! Ha ha! Why should you never flush a Koran down the toilet? No, so why should the Tidy Bowl man be subjected to that crap? And how do you get 70 young virgins to sleep with you? Tell him, if they don't, they'll have to spend eternity stopping Arab terrorists! What do you call 1 million Arabs displaced from southern Lebanon? A damn good start. No, but seriously, my beef is not with Arabs in general. Well, yes it is, but not all Arabs have to die. Just the ones with Islamic right-wing, violent, anti-Israel, anti-Jew beliefs, which is only 80-90% of the Arab population at most. All these naive people who are screaming, oh, they're refugees, oh, the collateral damage, oh, why is Israel overreacting and invading Lebanon instead of going after individual terrorists? You want to know why? Look at the news. 3 weeks of fighting and Hezbollah is still sending 200 rockets a day into northern Israel. Where do they get this artillery? Where do they get this machinery? If they have a stockpile like this now, how much do you think they have if Israel waited another 2 years for them to build up? That's why we gotta get them now, today! Not when Mashiach comes, not when those putzes from the United Nations wave their schmeckles like white flags and say, ceasefire! Hezbollah wants to claim a victory because Israel hasn't wiped it off the map. Yet. Fine. Claim a victory, with half your army dead, half your adopted country in rubble, and your commandos hiding in hospitals and firing from behind schools because they're too cowardly to fight like men. You know, when Abraham sent Ishmael into the desert, he knew what he was doing. It wasn't because Ishmael was a bested child he got from stooping the maid. It wasn't because his wife, Sarah, favored Isaac and wanted to make him the official firstborn. Avram just didn't want an Arab in the house. And who can blame him? He's like, I'm old, my wife's annoying, I have God talking to me all the time, why do I need an Arab in my life? Had Ishmael stayed, maybe things would be different. Maybe Jews and Arabs would be the same race. Maybe we'd be different, but get along, like Spanish and Mexicans. Maybe we'd be really different, but still intermarry, like Greeks and sheep. No, I'm kidding, but there's been a hatred there between the Bedouins and the B'nai B'rith since time immemorial. And for whatever reason, they hate us and won't let us be. Now, the hate part we can deal with. If you just want to hate me but leave me alone, that's perfectly all right. Screw you, but all right. I hate lychee nuts. You don't see me rushing to the supermarket and smashing the cans with a hammer. But hate can be a good thing. Even racism. It gives you something to be better than, to feel superior to. Look at the Polish, if you must. They were miserable, the butt of every joke that wasn't about black people, Jewish people, or Helen Keller. I still tell Polish jokes, and I'm half Polish. How did Germany conquer Poland so quickly? They marched in backwards, so the Poles thought they were leading. How do you get a one-armed Polack out of a tree? Wave to him. What's unique about a Polish firing squad? They stand in a circle. These are terrible, nasty, shameful, racist jokes. But it's just humor, not violence.
and the Polish even got a break when God created Armenians. Now the Armenians are standing around waiting for someone to be better than. Now the Vietnamese were a possibility, but they're just not funny enough. But if you want to hate the Polish, the Armenians, the Luxembourgians, any country that eats its pets, go right ahead. Just don't kill, don't rape, don't maim, don't overcharge on sales tax and pocket the difference. If you want to be a stupid, thoughtless, brainless, retarded, son of a bitch idiot who hates Jews, that's your business. Which brings us to Mel Gibson. Is anybody surprised that this schmuck is an anti-Semite? He makes a movie about Jesus, where all the Jews look like something out of a Nazi cabaret, and everybody bends over backwards, especially Jews, to say, oh, he's just following the book. Oh, the Romans don't come off so hot either. Oh, it's the movies. You can't expect them to cast Brad Pitt and Samuel L. Jackson as Hebrew priests. Meanwhile, every goy in the world is paying to experience this movie like a church sermon. And what do they see? A bunch of bearded, hook-nosed actors who look like mole rats jumping up and down and cheering every time another nail goes into Jesus' hand. It's pornography for the goyim, like a horror movie. How much can they take? Someone gets his eyes drilled out in hostel? Big deal. Watch the skin peel off Jesus' ass when the Jews whip him good. And still, more people went to see this nonsense than Fiddler on the Roof, Annie Hall, and Mr. Saturday Night combined. I still think The Passion of the Christ is payback for Neil Diamond and the Jazz Singer. But anyway, the clues were there. The signs were all pointing to anti-Semite bested when it came to Mel Gibson. Conservative Catholic, father was a raving anti-Semite, a Holocaust denier. But Mel's a good-looking kid, a fine actor. He becomes part of the Hollywood machine. And he keeps his most lethal weapon, his mouth, under lock and key, because he has handlers and agents and managers and spokesmen to speak for him. Until he gets drunk. He gets a little shicker with some ladies in an L.A. bar, and suddenly, he's Father Coughlin. Now, we must all realize that alcoholism is a disease. Like syphilis, only with even more dripping. There is a part of Mel Gibson that cannot control his behavior or his need for a beer. Or seven beers. And once the beer goes in, the bull crap comes out. So, what does he say to the police? They pull him over, and he's stumbling around like Helen Keller in Filene's basement. He tries to run away, then he starts bitching about the police. He calls one of the deputies sugar boobs. I'm sanitizing that, by the way. The word was not boobs. Nor boobies, nor meat melons, nor gazangas, nor fungos, nor hooters, nor jugs, nor puppy heads. Just so we have that clear, it was the other one. He called the deputy Sugar Boobs, and you could tell he was really drunk because the deputy was a man. No, just kidding. And then Mr. Gibson goes on the rant. Jews start all the wars. Pardon me. Jews are responsible for all the trouble in the world. He asks one cop if he's a Jew, which is not quite the same as when the mitzvah van people do it. If it's near Rosh Hashanah and a bunch of black haggers in a mitzvah tank jump out and start asking people, hey, are you Jewish? That's a little different from a belligerent Australian booze hound saying, are you one of them? And go figure, the deputy who arrested Magic Mel was Jewish. James Mee. What kind of name is that for a Jew? Maybe he shortened it from Meebaum. I don't know. I wonder what the deputy answered Mel Gibson. Yes, this is your lucky day. Scheiß for brains, I am Jewish. Let's go downtown and discuss Talmud. So they took Gibson in, and they booked him on a DUI. That stands for Dumb Unrepentant Ignoramus. And that is when the spin started. That is when the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department said, look, let's not ruin the man's life just because his blood alcohol was over the limit. He got into a motor vehicle, went weaving down the highway, got stopped by police, resisted arrest, tried to run away, became abusive and insulting, tried to pee on the floor, and he thinks he can walk away from it because he's famous. Let's not make it a big deal. Of course, if Mel Gibson were 19 years old and black, they'd be dragging his body from an underpass right now. But because he's a big poo-poo Hollywood star who made a nice public service message for the sheriff's office a while back, the sheriff says, you know that stuff in the police report about the Jews and the sugar boobs, but mainly the Jews. Let's leave that out of the version that goes in the newspapers. If it hadn't been for the TMZ website and some honest cop who wanted the truth out, this would be just another celebrity rehab story. Like Lindsay Lohan without the breasts. I'm not sure if hers are sugar boobs or syrup boobs. Depends what she's eating that week. But once the full Mel Gibson story gets out, then it's a double whammy because the hate speech was bad enough. But then he and the LAPD tried to make nice. When the lid came off, that's when the apologies came. That's when we got Mel saying, look, I need to meet with the Jews to begin the healing. No. You need to meet with Alcoholics Anonymous to begin the healing. Save the Jews for later. And I absolutely agree with my cantorial brother Jackie Mason that you cannot hold someone totally responsible for something they say when they're shicker. It's like putting a rabbi under hypnosis and he says, oh boy, one day I'd really like to try a ham sandwich. If I have one more pastrami on club, I'm going to vomit. Give me a shrimp, a lobster claw, anything! You can't hold him responsible for that. His brain is not being controlled by his brain. But does that mean deep down, the rabbi craves the all-you-can-eat buffet at Lenny's Clam Bar? Absolutely! It's in there, it's buried, it's subconscious, it's part of him. And part of what makes him a rabbi is the choice to sublimate the desire for treif and be the best Jew he can. 98% of the time, Mel Gibson is a handsome movie star with a wife and kids and fans all over the world. 2% of the time, he's a filthy, Jew-hating scumbag who should burn in hell with Professor Griff and Louis Farrakhan. But has Mel Gibson ever killed a Jew? Has he ever given money to Hezbollah to make rocket attacks on northern Israel? Has he made TV commercials saying, go hurt Jews? No. So let him stew in his own mental illness. I don't have to see his movies. They say he was working on a Holocaust miniseries. That should be fun. In his version, Buchenwald is a day camp. And the Jews are like the kids in Oliver. You know, all they want is more food. They go around stealing. They're noisy. It's all the poor Nazis can do to keep them fed, clothed, and deloused. And I love the scene where the little Jewish boy is just about to walk into the gas chamber. And he turns to the SS officer and says, I forgive you. The SS officer says, no, I forgive you. And they both hug. So touching. I could just crap myself with tenderness. Now, to be fair, Gibson signed on to produce Dachau, Born to Lead, or whatever the hell it's called, months before the scandal. So something in him wants to be a human being. Something in him wants to acknowledge the truth about the death camps and about the New Testament and about Jews in general that goes against everything his father taught him and against everything the Heineken dredged up from his distended puppet. Forgiveness? Not from me. It's not my place. And it is not in me to forgive or forget that kind of hatred. Because if it's there now, it will always be there. He can go to therapy, he can visit Yad Vashem, he can do seders with Jeffrey Katzenberg, it doesn't matter. He still can't help what he is deep down. Now, I know of one rabbi, I don't know him personally, and it's a good thing, because if I did, I'd smack him down like a roll of challah dough. One rabbi in Los Angeles invited Mel Gibson to be their guest speaker on Yom Kippur. Remember Yom Kippur? I explained it at the beginning of all this. Pay attention, dammit! Anyway, this rabbi thinks it'd be a great idea to have an anti-Semite atone, get it? Day of Atonement? Atone for his verbal sins. Excuse me, but inviting Mel Gibson for the High Holy Days? Isn't that like inviting Jaws to a sardine convention? Is Mel Gibson really the person you want to hear when you're sitting there thinking about a plate of whitefish you can't have for another 6 hours? I don't think so. And what's he going to say, huh? I was wrong about the Jews. You don't start all the wars, just the recent ones. And although my father never told me a lie, he may have gotten some facts slightly incorrect about the Holocaust. Maybe more than a few dozen Jews were exterminated. Why, I'm willing to go so far as to say a whole football stadium of Jews got killed in World War II. Along with the gypsies, the political prisoners, the faggots, everybody suffered. It was a bad time. But worse for you, okay? I'll give you that. Now, what else would Mel Gibson say? Oh, poor Jews. I never meant to imply that you were so devious and powerful and rich and you own everything. That was just the alcohol talking. Granted, even though I was plastered, you didn't hear me go off on the Chinese. You didn't hear me say, God damn those Puerto Ricans and their cockroaches. No. You didn't hear me say, oh, the world would be so much better without the Swedish. No. I went to the Jew place. I'm sorry, it happens. There's something in me that doesn't like the Hebes. Maybe I'm allergic. Maybe I come within 10 feet of a Jew, I start drinking. I don't know. All I know is that you people shouldn't take it personally. It's not you. It's me. Well, it's me reacting to you, but it's not your fault. You're Jews. You are who you are, and you can't change that, no matter how much you should. And you people have suffered enough without a big, important superstar like me saying nasty things about your tribe. So, let's live and let live. I'll keep making movies. You keep running the banks. Happy holidays. I'll be signing autographs in the lobby. Ay, Mel, Mel, Mel. All I have to say is, thank you. Thank you for bringing your deep-seated hatred out into the open. Thank you for saying what we know so many goyim think, except the evangelical ones who love Jews because they need Israel to explode so Jesus can come back. Of course they're crazy, but the enemy of my enemy, blah, blah, blah. So, thank you, Mel, most of all, for showing that you can have rancor and bitterness and evil in your heart and still hide it, and behave 98% of the time like a nice person. If all the world could do that, if the Palestinians blowing themselves up in Gaza could suppress it and make movies instead, if Hezbollah ambushing Israeli soldiers and firing missiles into Haifa would instead pick up cameras and make Lethal Weapon 6, what a better place we would all be living in. I say what the world needs now is more Mel Gibsons, speaking openly, apologizing, ranting, smiling at the ladies. It'd be a better-looking world, a more peaceful world, a more honest world. Just make sure they all take mass transit. All right, well, those are my feelings, and again, I'd like to thank Dave for giving me a chance to express them on his wonderful program. I don't know how he got on such a goyish station, but that's for another time. On behalf of my dear wife Miriam Libby and our children, Nehemia, Josiah, Shloimi, Chana, Rivki, Yehuda, Moish, Yehezkel, Boruch, Avigda, Yisrael, Hepzibah, Shaul, Aliza, Shimon, Gedalia, Naftuli, Fred, by my first marriage, and baby Beryl, who just said her first Yiddish word. Or maybe she was spitting up, it's hard to tell. And our latest edition, the Fetus Cletus. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon wishing you safe driving, cooler temperatures, and smarter movie stars. Shalom uvracha. These are the Daves, my friend, the perfect radio blend of comedy, talk, radio, and more. Yes, these are the Daves. More than 80 episodes of Daves Gone By on compact disc for your listening pleasure. Long drive home? Pop in a Dave. In the mood for a funny sketch? Pop in a Dave. All CDs come in jewel cases with full packaging, just $12, new low price. Same free shipping and handling. Add another dollar, and I'll autograph the cover. Don't know which episode? Visit davesgoneby.org or email davesgoneby@aol.com and ask for the CD list. These are the Daves, my friend. Makes a great gift to send. Give them a try if you love Daves Gone By.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor a show segment or the whole show. Just go to davesgoneby.org to see the rates or call 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By. Yes, yes, hold on, hold on. We're not done yet with Dave's Gone By. I want to thank you so much for being with me on this evening. And I want to thank, of course, Rabbi Saul Solomon for, wow, that's one of the longest rants he's ever done. But I think he made some pretty good points in between all the vicious race-baiting and hostility. But yes, indeed, I think he does have something to say, and he says it the only way he can. And by the way, I've got to say again, thank you to the sponsors of Dave's Gone By: Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at this wonderful place, and family-run since the middle of the 1970s, by the way, the Toron folks. Love dealing with them, and they do really good work. Hewlett Minuteman Press. Also, Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Everything you want to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, everything going on in New York City, regional theater, too. And as I said, coming out in late next week is the fall preview issue. It's a September 1st issue, and boy, oh boy, it's like this thick. Now, if this were not radio but television, you could see my fingers spread apart in an approximation of the word this. So it's this thick finger-wise, and worth every page. So Performing Arts Insider, to find out more about it, go to performingartsinsider.com. And I do believe that Dave's Gone By listeners also get a 10% discount off subscriptions to that magazine. That you can go actually to my website, davesgoneby.org, and find out about that. By the way, my website is a good place to find out about all sorts of things on the show. We have a list of every show we've done since the very beginning. Who were the guests? What were the sketches? The music that we played, literally going back to 2002 all the way till now. And most of those shows are available on CD, almost all of them, in fact, and they're it's still the summer sale, so normally they're $12, but they're only $11 shipping and handling included if you want to get yourself a piece of the Dave. Well, we're running a little bit over time here on Dave's Gone By, which is always fun, so before I play my outro music and then the outro stuff I wanted to do, I guess I'll play a little bit of Freddie Fender, because well, there's news that he's got incurable, inoperable, and all sorts of nasty kind of cancers. So, you know, barring a miracle, he's sort of made up his... It's sort of that he's gotten into that Warren Zevon sort of mode. He knows it's just a matter of time, and he's had a good run. He would like to live longer, but probably won't happen. So, well, this radio station has very, very few CDs of its own besides gospel CDs. There's no pop. There's one or two country CDs. But amazingly enough, on one of those country CDs is the Freddie Fender song "Wasted Days and Wasted Nights." So let's hear a little bit of that song, and then I'll be back to wrap up the show.
Wasted days and wasted nights. I have left for you behind. For you don't belong to me. Your heart belongs to someone else. Why should I keep loving you when I know that you're not true? And why should I call your name when you're the blame for making me blue? Don't you remember the day that you went away and left me? I was so lonely, prayed for you only, my love. Why should I keep loving you when I know that you're
Why should I call your name when you're the blame for making me blue?
As you can hear, this was not the big hit country music version. This is kind of an earlier one. So it sounds like, I guess the song was recorded maybe 10 or 20 years before we actually all knew about it and it became famous. But, well, this is Freddie. Wasted days and wasted nights. I hope Freddie Fender has several more years of days and nights, but that is really, really unlikely, and that's kind of sad. I don't really have any feelings for him as an artist particularly, except for the fact that my dad was a big country music fan for just a couple of years, and those were the years when country was big in New York, and also years I was younger, and we would go on our summer vacations to places, and Dad would drive, because my mom wouldn't fly. So we go to Atlantic City or Binghamton or wherever it was, these long country drives, as it were, and they would be playing the same top 20 or 30 on the radio. And Freddie Fender, you would hear that song or Before the Next Teardrop Falls, which is good, solid country music writing. So I do wish him well, and that's my little memory of Freddie Fender. Anyway, the gospel folks have shown up, so we can get this show out and get them rolling. Last couple of things I wanted to say. Catch a Vintage Dave's Gone By episode every Saturday night at 11 on DFSX Radio. You can listen again. You can click from davesgoneby.org to get there. And also, I forgot to say that if you want to hear my stint on another radio station, WUSB, out in Stony Brook, that's all recorded, and you can hear it just for this week because they rotate it on their website. But the full stint that I just did late Friday night into Saturday morning, 3 a.m. to 6:30 in the morning, mostly music. I did some talking too, and some really great, wonderful music. Everything from Liz Phair to Howlin' Wolf to Bob Dylan. I mean, you name it. Show tunes. I just went nuts, and I had a wonderful time. If you go to davesgoneby.org, you can go to the link that'll where you can hear the whole set. Not that you don't have anything better to do with your life, but there you go. Anyway, I'm Dave Lefkowitz. Been happy to be with you here on WGBB. I will be back next week with the 184th edition of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. Good night. Don't drink and drive unless you're famous. And gone by.